Welcome back to the Chasing Tone podcast today. Hi, Blake.
Hello.
Blake Weiland is back with me again.
I'm here. Here I am.
Rocking like
glad to be here.
Yep. So today we wanted to talk about this key point. The pedal market is doomed in closing. Actually, no. Have we finally reached pedal market saturation? From a thread on the gear page.
The gear page.
Yes.
The very one and only gear page.
Yeah, it had a lot of good thoughts. Some negatives, some positive. There were people that were talking about how it absolutely is done. The pedal market is doomed. It's you know, breaking apart at the seams, tearing apart at the seams rather. And here before long, we're all going to be playing a $100 Chinese version of Fractal.
Okay, well that's one way to look at it, I suppose. I suppose.
Well, then,
that's not how I see it.
Yeah, I mean, there's also okay. Other people that are like, nope, I still buy stupid amounts of pedals every year. You know?
I don't know anybody that fits that description. What are you talking about?
No, I've never bought a pedal before.
Never.
But
never. Not yesterday.
But I did find it interesting that Fractal released the FM3. I assume to be a Line 6 HX competitor.
Yeah, I seen that. And I seen some excitement around it for sure, but not nearly as much excitement as I would have thought I would have around a product like that, which is kind of interesting.
It was, yeah. My thought is, when is Kemper going to jump in the game and be like, all right, we're going to a smaller version, more simplified, cheaper version?
I'm sure they will. Like,
I would think so.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe they don't see that as their place in the market.
I don't know. It seems like they would have done it by now, but I would have thought the same thing about Fractal. So I'm not really sure what's going on behind the doors over there.
Well, I mean, it takes a long time to make a digital product. It really does. I mean, especially as we've been working on this Terraform for what seems like forever now.
It's been a while. It's been a bit.
Oh, man. I mentioned this on our Facebook group. One thing I really didn't take into account that seriously was it takes a bit to make one effect. It's basically like making 11 different effects. Time-wise,
mm-hmm.
Like, because you literally are making 11 different effects. It's all in the same box, but the procedure to make all these different effects is the same thing. So it takes, it just takes a while to get it right. I mean, you could throw something together, throw it in a box, get it out to retailers and be like, all right, here it is. But, especially since this is our first major heavy DSP-based product, I want it to be just killer, you know? So we're very close. It's taken a little bit longer to get everything done. Like I said, because it's like 11 different pedals in one, but hopefully, right now what I heard was, midsummer.
Oh, geez, Brian,
I know
you're killing us. You're killing us, Smalls.
It brings me a lot of pain and headaches as well for that to be the truth. But it just simply is. It takes that long to get everything done. We had the prototypes, but I got to be careful here how I phrase this. Getting the prototypes with the new code is going to take a bit. And then after, we'll gig worthy. We'll make sure those are gig worthy, meaning, you throw it in front of a loud band. Does it still sound good? Is it still usable or is it pointless? You know?
And you have to do that for each mode too.
Yes.
It's not just one. Here's the phaser. Let's see if that works. Okay, great. That works.
Right.
No, it's all of them.
Yeah. Like I said, it's literally like making 11 pedals at once, which, I guess I underestimated, if I'm honest. I was hoping it would be more simple, but no. Nope. So,
well, there's a first time for everything, Brian.
Yes, there is.
Now you know.
Now I know. Now I know. So,
which while you were saying all this, I was doing some dot connecting in my head. And yeah, this stuff takes a long time, and especially if you want to get it right. But back, you know, going back to when's Kemper going to do it? Imagine how long it's going to take them.
Oh, yeah.
To cram all that stuff.
I guess that's actually where I was going from. Thank you. Trying to go to. I just forgot what I forgot what my point was. So yeah, the point I was really trying to make is that I know it seems like it's taken Fractal a long time to do it. It's probably because there is so complicated what they're building, you know, and I don't think they're owned by Samsung or anything.
Right, right. They don't have the budget. I mean, it took Line 6 a while to do what they're doing, and they're
huge.
They're a subsidiary of Yamaha, which obviously is like an enormous company.
Gigantic.
That has,
yep.
Builds jet skis and effects pedals. Right. So, you know, do a lot of stuff.
They're busy building motorcycles, man. Give them a break. But yeah, so you're right. I mean, I don't know. I think it'd be really cool if Kemper did throw their hat in the ring, but I see a lot of inexpensive Chinese built units coming very soon. And I think
did I say that out loud?
I think that came across. I don't know if you'd covered your mouth quite enough, but
sorry about that.
Yeah, one might call them copies. That might be a way to put it. And once that happens, it's the cyclical thing, in my opinion. We saw it happen with multi-effects in the 90s. You know, when you started getting effects units that rack-based effects units were a couple $100, and they did everything. And then everybody had one. And it kind of became boring. And so,
yeah, there was no uniqueness to it because everyone's using the same patches, you know, basically. That's not universally true, but
and then George
everyone's
Trips
using the same settings.
Right. And then George Trips and a few other people started to be like, "You know what? I think I'm just going to make like there's some really cool old effects that I can't find. I'm just going to make some, you know?" And then people were like, "Hey George, I'll buy that off you." And the boutique market was born.
was that who you'd point to? You would know a lot better than me. Would you point to George?
Honestly, Josh Scott would probably know because he knows way more that historical aspect of things. Where I'm more into like, well, what made that pedal so cool? You know, what kind of circuit was it that made that so good? And Josh isn't on here, unfortunately, but he would probably know.
You want me to text him?
Text him real quick and see what he thinks. Tell him we're right in the middle of a podcast, and we need him to stop what he's doing and answer our question.
Immediately. Yeah. That would be my level view of it, though. I feel like George would be a possible, you know, godfather of the of this industry, so to speak.
Right. When was Mike Fuller? Analog Man's been doing it. Yeah. I think Analog Man, he was in the 90s too, wasn't he? He's been doing stuff for a long time.
Yeah, I believe mid 90s. I don't know. It's like I should get Mike on the podcast and ask him or something. Maybe I should do that.
He'd be a good one to get on Tone Mob for sure.
We've been working on it. He's had some scheduling difficulties, but he's definitely down to do it. So looking forward to that.
You don't hear a lot of interviews with Mike Pira. You know?
No, you don't.
And I'm surprised.
And that's interesting because everyone knows Analog Man.
Oh yeah. So Mike's coming on your podcast.
Yes.
Maybe. Right?
It's been like a few months of wrangling. He's like super busy and had some family stuff going on and you know, that threw a wrench in the gears, obviously, same here. So,
that's right. You had a new little baby.
Oh yeah, I don't know if we've recorded.
I don't think we've talked about that. No, and since last time you were on, you you added a plus one.
Yes, yes, that's yeah. Why I was MIA there for a little bit, and yes, that was because there's a new little boy running around the house. And, well, he's not really running; he's just kind of laying there.
I appreciate you naming him Brian after me. You know, that was a really nice thing for you to do.
Yeah, well, you know, I just thought, you know, I got to think of the most noble and powerful and strong name that I could. And then, so I went with Brian. Yeah.
Middle name Wampler, right?
Yeah, Brian Wampler Weiland. It's a great, great, great child's name. It's a wonderful baby's name. I think everybody should name their kid that. But no, his name's Rocky, and he's everybody's great. Everybody's healthy. I talked about it on my show a little bit and in a few of the gear groups. I didn't like make a big announcement or anything, but like, yeah, that is why I've been a little bit out of sorts for a while. So pretty stoked about that, which means only one thing. It means that I have to, and I already did this yesterday, I have to go harass Chris Benson over at Benson Amps, because that means I have a new child. That means I need a new amplifier.
Is that how that works? So, new child, new gear?
New child, well, I kind of accidentally started a tradition with the first one where, you know, he's got a couple amplifiers out on the market with his name on it. The Benson Vinny and Benson Vincent could both be, sort of directed back to his birth as being the birth of those amps. So, I think I've told the story before, but I'll nutshell it. I commissioned the first Benson Vinny that was ever made just to be kind of a toy for my kid. And Chris doesn't make toys. He's like, no, if it comes out of here, it has to sound good. And so he spent some time developing a really cool 1-watt guitar amp circuit, and that became the Benson Vinny, which then translated into the Benson Vincent a few years later after we were brainstorming a bunch of different ideas about running big amps into small, or small amps into big amps rather. Mm-hmm. And
I'm just curious, is it kind of dangerous to have a tube amp in the crib with your baby?
No. Scientifically, this has been studied many, many times, and they actually get a certain amount of good stimuli from the tube amplifier, and it helps with the kill free radicals improve antioxidant processes, and
they get vitamin T, vitamin tone, right?
That's right. That's right. You provide your child with enough vitamin T, they will be okay.
I'm gonna start using that from now on.
Gotta get some vitamin T.
This pedal comes with a healthy surplus of vitamin T for tone.
Oh man, that makes me laugh harder than it probably should.
All right, so pedal market saturation. I know we've kind of
that's what we were talking about.
Meandered along here a little bit, but So I guess what I was getting at is, I think it's all cyclical. Personally, I think that, I mean, we'll always have multi-effect stuff, but I know personally some people that were like at like complete Kemper and Fractal, like they sold everything, just going with the Kemper, just going with the Fractal, and now they are, it's not that they're like, that sucks, I'm going back to amps, but what I've heard is they're like, well, went to my buddy's house or whatever, and he had an amp, and I plugged into it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, man, I forgot what this feels like and sounds like to have, you know, to have something that's reacting to you like a tube amp does.
It's a completely different thing. We've talked about it, like, yeah, you know, ad nauseum on this podcast, but it's and it's kind of a similar experience. Not similar experience, but on a recent podcast, I was talking to Kurt Ballou from Converge, who's a lot of people know, but he's a really well-known guitar player, well-known band, but he's also a very well-known engineer and producer. And he was talking about the Helix, and he had used the Helix on a recent Australian leg of the tour, and you know, said it was great and everything. And then once we got done with the podcast, and he talked about a lot of other gear too, but he sent me a picture of his like live room, and he had this like, I don't remember, like six different marshals and a whole bunch of different. He's like, yeah, the Helix works and all, but you know, here's this.
Right.
So it's, there's almost, I'm not sure what the word is. It's a hard to put your finger on thing about quote unquote the real deal, I think.
Yeah. So kind of as an aside a little bit, have you ever heard of Machine Gun Kelly?
I've heard of him. I seen him in a movie once, but I've never actually heard him.
I think he played Tommy Lee in the new Motley Crue movie, didn't he? But I think okay. So. But he's also, I know he's a rapper. Yes. Apparently he like made a diss song about Eminem or something like that. I don't know that whole story, but anyways, someone had tagged me in an Instagram post because he was playing guitar and he was using one of my pedals. And I'm like, I'm like, this has like several million views. So I, of course, asked my son, I'm like, who is this? And he's like, that's Machine Gun Kelly. And I'm like, is he popular or something? He's like, well, yeah. And he explained like this whole story of around Eminem. I can't really say what he said because I tuned him out after about 3 seconds, because it started out with Eminem and he started like becoming Eminem in the way he was talking. And I'm like, all right, that's enough, son. Enough of that. anyways, but he was apparently he was using one of my pedals. So I thought that was pretty cool. It looked like a Euphoria. It was hard to tell because it was a video on Instagram and it wasn't super duper clear. But, you know, because he wasn't like, hi, I'm Machine Gun Kelly, and when I play guitar, I use the Wampler Euphoria. It was nothing like that. It was just on the floor. And so I zoomed it in and you could see the Wampler logo at the bottom.
Well, that's cool.
I suppose. I mean, it's not like Eminem's using it or anything. But,
you know. Oh, ouch. You know, I feel like Mr. Kelly's going to listen to this, and he might take offense to that.
Well, I don't know whether they call him Machine or just Kelly, Mr. Kelly, but I'm just joking, dude. I don't, you know, no offense. You played You did a great Tommy Lee. And my son loves you, apparently. We keep getting off topic about pedal market saturation.
Are we ever going to actually talk about that? Man, we really got to work on this. We should like podcast more often so that we can actually get good at this one of these days.
I feel
a nice change.
I'll be honest. My blood sugar is a little bit low right now. Mm-hmm. And some a little bit like foggy in the noggin.
Well, we should have got you a bagel before this whole operation.
Well, or a Snickers, you know.
Woo!
Need a Snickers for situations like this, but it's not very podcast friendly to be eating a candy bar, or, you know. It sounds like that while you're eating, you know.
Yeah, that's great. Just put more of that in the podcast, Brian. Just do that again. That's what people need. You see what I have to work with. You guys see what I have to work with here. Look at this. Pedal right. Market saturation.
Yes, pedal market saturation. And Fractals do FM3.
At 20 minutes in, we'll finally get to the topic of pedal market saturation. So is the pedal market saturated? Obviously, the answer is yes. Like, there are so many companies doing so many things and so many of them doing a great job at it. I am kind of with you. I do see the cyclical nature of it. It makes a lot of sense. I've seen people go into a Helix land or somewhere like that and return. I will say that I've never seen anybody. This is where I always stand. I've never seen anybody start using pedals and then never use pedals again. Like, that almost never happens. Can you think of anybody that's ever gotten really heavy into effects and then said, you know what? Never going to use pedals ever again.
I've read where some people said that they're, you know, I can't say I know personally, but I've read threads or comments from people where they say they had a bunch of pedals and now they bought a Fractal or whatever, and they sold all their pedals. I have seen that, but
I always see them come back. It might take some time, so. but they I, They generally come back to something. Or they integrate the pedals with the Fractal. I've seen a lot of actually really cool rigs that have both, like an HX Stomp and a whole bunch of pedals.
Right. Yeah, I see a lot of that. I see that
being very, very versatile.
Yeah, I mean, Jason Wilding, he uses I don't remember which one of the Line 6 Helixes it is. But he uses a Line 6 of some sort and mixes that with pedals. And there's a lot of people that do, actually. But, I mean, I think it's harder and harder to create a fuzz or a distortion or, you know, something like that, a boost. I mean, I think, especially with DIY being as strong as it is and Reverb.com being as strong of a platform to sell that on, you can still sell them, but I think people are getting burnt out on the amount of them.
Yeah,
But then you have the ayahuasca, you know?
That's a whole nother thing, though.
Yeah, so I mean, like, how can you say it's if you have a list that you have to? So people may not know, there was like a pre-order application you had to fill out to even try to get one of these pedals, right? So you had to apply to buy the pedal. And to me, if that's possible, then I wouldn't say the overall pedal market is saturated necessarily. But
yeah, that's a weird signifier, right? Like if that's a thing that is possible in the market and people are willing to do it, it's hard to say it's oversaturated, because if that was the case, then nobody would be able to pull that off.
Right. I do think it's odd that on at least on this thread here in the gear page, there are people that say, you know, I am peaked on buying pedals. I'm not buying anymore. And I'm like reading this, I'm like, okay, so you're tired of pedals, but yet you're posting in the pedal forum, you know? So right. maybe you aren't really tired of pedals. You're just satisfied with what you have for now, maybe.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying everybody always comes back. It's the one thing that grabs you, and just when you think you're out, they pull you back in. It just seems to be the case with guitar pedals for whatever reason that may be. And I'm sure there's exceptions. There's definitely people who have went to full Helix rigs, full Kemper rigs, and they're totally happy and totally into it. And those are amazingly useful tools, and they sound great and they work well. But it just seems like if you ever even dipped your toe into the pedal world, it seems like you're going to still use some sort of individual pedals at some point.
Right.
And I don't know why that is. I don't have a reason for it. It's just my observations from being around for a little while now.
Yeah. Well, I know that, so I had mentioned to you that we're going to make a few customized pedals, you know, so just in 4 or 5 or so of this previous pedal I had on a video. I breadboarded a circuit, made it into a fuzz, a clean boost, an overdrive, and a distortion, all by changing crap happening within the circuit, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had several people that reached out to me and like, hey, I'd like to buy that if you want to build one. And it's been about a year since I did any custom stuff. So I thought, well, it might be a fun thing to do. Maybe make a couple of them until I get tired of messing with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to do it completely different. So I want to make, like, this kind of would go back towards the boutique swirly painted roots, you know what I mean, of the 2000s. Not that I'm going to make a $2,000 swirly paint tube screamer. $500 swirly painted tube screamer, like what was popular, you know, in 2005. But I like the enclosure is not going to be a powder coated enclosure. It's going to be a custom painted enclosure, let's say.
Okay.
But it's without giving too much away. It's going to be a unique looking enclosure. And then I did, my wife actually is doing it because she likes messing with all that kind of crap. She'll appreciate me calling it crap, by the way.
Yeah, she'll really like that. I know. Yeah, Amanda's going to love that.
But yeah, but I mean, she's been, you know, those tumblers. She's been making tumblers and doing like glitter paints and all that stuff that she's into. And she did this one that looked like wood. And I'm like, that looks really cool. And so I said, can you do that on an enclosure? And so she tried it. And I was like, wow, that looks pretty cool. So yeah, it's pretty wild. And then I got to thinking, because she's now apparently like swirly painted tumblers are cool in her circle. And so I was showing her the pedal of the Landgraf Overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course it's swirly painted. And she was like, because she was asking me, she's like, do you think people would like that on a pedal? And I was like, it's kind of already been done. And now it's kind of, you know, I wouldn't say it's made fun of, but maybe look down on a little bit if you have a three knobbed swirly painted pedal.
Yeah, it's, I would say, I don't know if it's looked down on necessarily.
Maybe it's a little cliche, maybe.
I'd say, yeah, it's viewed through a different lens than it used to be.
Right.
To put it nicely.
Right. So, I don't know. I wouldn't say that we're going to make, I know we're not going to make 100 of them, but maybe three or four different pedals every now and then, you know?
Just for kicks.
Just for fun. Yep. So, anyways.
Until he gets tired of it. Everybody remember, Brian gets tired of things. And it's amazing that he's talked to me for 27 minutes now, because I'm surprised he's not bored with me yet.
Well, remember that time that we were doing Metal Zone and DS1 mods for about a month?
Yes.
And then I'm like, oh, this sucks so bad.
See what I mean? I've modified
12 pedals of these the same way. This is so old now.
But yet they still sucked you back in somehow. See, it's the thing. It's the thing about pedals. They got a magical magnet and they attract nerds somehow. It's just what they do.
Well, there is a part of it that is really creative. It's usually the breadboarding part, which I think that's probably why, like, the first one or two, I'm like, this is cool. And by that 10th one, I'm like, this sucks.
Do you actually think that you get tired of the sound, or are you just tired of doing the same thing?
Tired of doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, I say I'll probably do three or four, and then we'll do something else. And just know me. Like, I'll just be like, not doing it anymore. I'm going to do something different. And then maybe we'll do three or four of those.
Squirrel.
pretty much. Yeah. It's a very short attention span and a lack of wanting to do the same thing over and over, which, as I've said before, is why I don't build all the Wampler pedals myself. That's why I am partnered with someone that's very good at manufacturing and very good at doing the same thing over and over. My thing I like to do is sit in front of a breadboard and try to come up with new stuff.
You've said that before?
I once or twice, I think I mentioned it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I couldn't
episode
remember.
Episode 118, I think, is when I said it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the only time you've ever said it, ever. Did we ever actually get to the topic? I feel like we shouldn't even put that as the show title at this point.
All right. So let's just put a button on it. Let's finalize it. No, the pedal world is not saturated. The industry is not saturated as far as no one's going to buy any more pedals anymore. That's not where we're at. But I think things are always going to change, and eventually I think it's going to come back around. So, yes, maybe people may be tired of buying, I don't know. What's a pedal you're tired of seeing, Blake?
Personally, I don't know. I like pedals. I would say, if anything, there's probably plenty of DS1s in the world. I don't know. I'm not really tired of seeing anything at this point, but there's millions of DS1s at this point. I guess Boss can just cease production. I don't know.
No more DS1s or Metal Zones for anyone.
No. I don't know. I don't know. Basically, I don't know. I'm an outlier. I don't get tired of anything. I love pedals, so it's hard for me to judge. But I understand what you're saying. People are tired of seeing clones.
Yes. So I would say I'm tired of seeing... I'm tired of seeing, and I know this is a little bit hypocritical, I'm tired of seeing clones in general. Mm-hmm. Tired of Tube Screamer clones for sure. But I understand how some people could like the Tumnus, for example. Some people just love the clone circuit. And so they buy several different ones and they figure out which one they like. I get that. I think it's going to come back around to where people are like, all right, so we've done the two skimmers, we've done the clones, we've done the distortion pluses, whatever. Now let's do something that's not out yet. I could be wrong. I know there are plenty of people doing unique stuff. Maybe that part of the market is ready for a comeback, you know, in some way.
Well, I think so. And I'll give my closing thoughts on it. And basically it's this, and you guys know this, I've talked about it before. Like, I work with a handful of different companies talking, and we talk about this same thing all the time. And my answer has always been, for individual effects unit companies, I think the way forward is to start thinking, quote unquote, outside the box. Like, you need to make things that make sounds that you absolutely cannot make in one of these multi-effects units. So whether that be the Helix, the Fractal, whatever your flavor is, that's where I try to push the people I talk to into thinking. It's like, okay, let's not make another three knob overdrive. Let's make something that cannot be replicated or modeled in that form factor. Let's make something new. Let's chase new sounds. That's what effects units are for me, is the kind of the pursuit of new sounds. And I think getting companies to shift their focus that way will kind of make them, in my opinion, sort of obsolete proof. You know, like, if you're continually pushing forward to try to find new sounds, which, let's be honest, we haven't heard all the sounds yet, then I feel like it's hard to get left behind. It's just kind of where are you focusing your attention as a company?
It could be. I mean, I think it also depends on the type of player. So I'll put me like as a player here. For me, I'm not personally looking for a synth sound or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For me, just because of what I do, I'm always going to love overdrives, distortions, fuzzes, the meat and potatoes, compressions. I like different compressors. But that's, even though there's so many of them, I can't have enough. I just cannot have enough.
Got to catch them all.
I have to catch each one, and they're slippery little critters.
That's right. You got to throw the Pokeball just right to absorb. I mean, we won't get into that. That's a whole nother thing.
All right. So that's a good place to wrap this episode up. If you have any comments or questions, you can email podcast@wamplerpedals.com. You can hit up Blake at info@tonemob.com, and also make sure you check out his podcast called The Tone Mob with a D at the end. And, yes. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week with a new one.
Bye.